Welcome back. We are thrilled to have Lachlan Murdoch, Executive Chairman and CEO of Fox, joining us today. Lachlan, hope you're well. It's great to see you. So much has happened since the emergence of New Fox in March of 2019. COVID has disrupted the market for anything live, as we all know, and the landscape has really evolved in the timeframe since you sold old Fox to Disney, with media companies building out larger and larger digital direct-to-consumer platforms. So not just Disney, but NBC, Viacom has announced a lot recently, AMC, et cetera. As all of these changes have taken shape, how has your strategy evolved?
Well, first of all, Jessica, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be here virtually. I wish we were together in person, not only with you, of course, but with all of your participants and guests today. It's been for all of us, right, an incredible year, and for New Fox, since our separation from the businesses that we sold to Disney. It's obviously been remarkable and remarkably hard in many ways, but luckily, and you know, fortune can go your way sometimes. And, you know, luckily we've been able to get through this COVID period, really incredibly well. Mostly due to the mix of our assets that we kept from the Disney transaction. You know, we kept, very deliberately and, with an intentional strategy and structure that is as correct and robust today as it was, 12 months ago or 2 years ago when we put the strategy together. Now, obviously, that strategy is all around live news, which has been, we're in the middle of one of the most remarkable news cycles in our lifetimes. Live sports, and we're very happy that live sports with NASCAR, with Major League Baseball, and this weekend, actually tonight, with the NFL is coming back, and with the tremendous entertainment products in our stations and Fox Entertainment. So the strategy really remains the same, but through that we understand we bought in the beginning of COVID, and it was a big decision because COVID was just hitting us. We bought a tremendous asset in Tubi Entertainment, an advertising video on demand platform that has seen really incredible growth, not only through the COVID lockdowns, as you'd expect for an AVOD entertainment product, but actually sustained that growth, post the lockdowns. So the strategy is evolving, but we really like our core businesses, and we've seen them actually strengthen during the COVID period.
So before we get into each of your individual businesses, I just wanted to ask a more general question or two. So after finishing fiscal 20 with over $4.6 billion in cash on hand, and then receiving another almost $500 million, $490 post-fiscal year-end related to the tax prepayment paid to Disney at the time of the spin. How do you weigh uncertainty in the current environment against what's a very strong and liquid balance sheet? Can you talk about how you feel about that?
Out of interest brings us to roughly since our investor day, and it feels like a decade ago, but our investor day, which was May of 2019, right? A little over a year ago, since our investor day, we bought back $850 million worth of shares. And if you add that to our dividends paid, We've returned to shareholders about $1.3 billion since that investor day just over a year ago. Out of interest, that's almost exactly the same. It's actually slightly more than we've spent in strategic acquisitions during the same period. So we think that's a good balance. I'm not sure that's going to be the balance always, but as we look at our balance sheet, we certainly are looking at ways to return capital to our investors as well.
That's great. So in the midst of COVID and with your first full fiscal year behind you, and I agree that Analyst Day seems like eons ago at this point, you know, it's amazing how what's happened since then. But how are you thinking about just the next 6 months?
Look, for us, and as I just mentioned, we are now seeing, a return of the advertising market that's rapid to levels that were, you know, pre-COVID levels. With the return of sports, we just talked about Major League Baseball, NASCAR, you know, football tonight, entertainment coming back into production. This season on entertainment, and I give a huge credit to our entertainment staff, Rob Wade, the head of our unscripted entertainment, and Charlie Collier, to get our unscripted entertainment back in production safely and quickly. And with that, you know, we're very happy that we'll have The Masked Singer, the number one TV show in America, back on air in a couple of weeks. So we're very happy with that. And then, of course, news. We are in the middle of an election cycle, which is, you know, driving incredible ratings. Unfortunately, through November, probably past November 3rd, it's going to continue to be an incredible news cycle. And obviously, with that news cycle, there's a tremendous amount, probably a record amount of political advertising that we're seeing both at our local stations and really for the first time nationally as well. So I think the next 6 months will be very strong.
That's actually incredible, because you've never had, there's never really been national politicals. That's an amazing thing. So let's go into the...
And Jessica, sorry to interrupt, but it's national political both on Fox News, right? But also, and just as importantly, and probably just as significantly, also in sports. So you'll see this Sunday, as we launch our NFL season, you'll see the Biden campaign spending quite substantially.
Wow. Okay. That is definitely different. So let's dive into your current trends for your businesses. Let's start with distribution. At the time of the spin, that was one of the strongest areas, you know, between affiliate fee growth, retrans growth. But since then, again, it seems like so long ago, but pay TV sub declines are accelerating. Last quarter, the industry was down 6.5%. I mean, it just fell off a cliff. And that was, of course, partially offset by the price increases that you've had. So you actually grew affiliate revenue by 8% in the fiscal fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. Can you give us any insight into the trajectory for affiliate fee growth in fiscal 21 and beyond?
So yes, absolutely. So as you know, we completed about 70% of our distribution, renewed 70% of our distribution agreements in this past year. Just by the nature of the cycle, we have less to renew over the next year or two. I think I don't know if we've announced it, but we closed with Frontier, which is a mid-sized a distributor in the last couple of weeks. And again, at pricing increases in line with our other agreements increases. So you know, we're very comfortable and very confident in our ability to continue to drive pricing. You know, really for the number one news network. We'll come back to news later, but the number one news was the number one network of all networks all throughout the summer, but the number one entertainment network, and obviously with all the tremendous sport that we have on. So we are very confident we'll be able to continue to drive pricing, offsetting those subscriber declines.
How much can the virtual MVPDs offset some of the traditional pay TV declines? Are you seeing any growth? Is it enough to offset these declines? It's highly doubtful, but how much can it offset?
Well, I think substantially offset the declines. You know, we had the larger VN and VPDs. This past year, I think they grew by about 2 million subscribers this past year. I think that brings us to roughly 9 million MVPD, about 9 million subscribers. And look, anyone who's used those services, you know, they are a tremendous service. I'd like to say, you know, we talked, you know, a couple of years ago about sort of the core bundle, like keeping the bundle and the VMPD.
I can't say it either.
I'm drinking lemon tea and it's making it harder. You know, we're talking about keeping that core bundle pricing as low as possible, where you could have the lowest possible price for the largest possible ratings and viewership and audience. I think the digital players have the bundles have gotten a little bit big, you know, and it's started to look a little bit too much like cable bundles. But I'm sure there'll be people who are looking to disrupt that as well.
Right. And what do you see in regard to retrans on the retrans side? So that was cable affiliate fee growth. What about retrans?
So retrans, we grew retrans about, I think, 19% last year in pricing. You know, obviously, when you look at retrans for us, we can talk about the strength of the Fox network and our stations. The two parts of that are obviously being the number one network, having the number one show in Masked Singer, you know, having you know, tremendous sports. But also when you look at the local stations, you know, the 1,000 hours of news that we produce each week across local news across the country also comes in that retrans negotiation or balance. Having said that, we obviously don't negotiate retrans for the stations on their own. We negotiate retrans with our cable affiliate distribution deals. And the strength of Fox News, obviously, you know, just continues to get more and more significant. So with those factors all combined together, you know, we're pretty confident or very confident that we'll continue to push retrans pricing in the years ahead.
You recently launched Fox International at a premium price point of $7 per month. I think that was in August, mm-hmm. which is higher than Fox Nation's $6 per month price. Can you talk about how you think about price or fair value for news and the demand that you're seeing for these two very different, you know, for these two offerings?
So they're very different offerings. You know, Fox Nation is for Fox News fans who want, you know, more of our content, more from our stars and our hosts and our reporters. And I'll call it sort of shoulder programming to Fox News. It's doing tremendously well. Consistently over the last year, the trial to conversion rate, you know, remains above 80%. So that's terrific. It was a big beneficiary of COVID as people came to it. It had some of its best growth weeks and sort of months through the COVID lockdowns. So that business is doing very well and growing. Fox News International, I think you have to think of it in a different way. You know, as none of us have been able to to travel like we used to, but you know, when you go overseas, you know, the number of times people have asked me, I still get emails about this, you know, all the time about, you know, if they have Fox News, that they love it, and they love seeing what Americans are watching. You know, I think globally people appreciate that Fox News is the number one news network by a long way in America, and they want to see what Americans are watching. And so we get requests all the time for Fox News in the markets where it isn't. And so Fox News International is really the linear feed of the channel that we watch today. Plus you can have some of the shows on demand. So if you're in London or, you know, you're somewhere where prime time's in the middle of the night, you can catch up later. So it's a very different service from Fox Nation. And we see it as a service just supporting you know, our viewers who want to watch the channel in markets where they otherwise wouldn't be able to.
Are there other opportunities to expand internationally?
I think probably, but you know, at the moment we are really a domestic, you know, sort of American focused company, and we like, and so that's not to say there won't be opportunities that emerge, but you know, we're focused on America, and we're focused, to be honest, on the America between New York and Los Angeles. Our brands, we think, are really, you know, about, you know, the middle of America.
All right, so let's move on to advertising. How has the advertising market embraced the return of sports? You mentioned NASCAR, MLB, NFL starts tonight. And what are the differences that you're seeing between broadcast and cable?
So on sports, so advertisers have a really, yeah, I don't want to say flock to sport, but they've embraced the return of sport, very strongly. This is partially also, to be honest, because until the fall season starts, and a lot of networks, I don't think ours, but we'll have a thinner fall season, particularly in scripted shows, than they have otherwise. So I think advertisers are obviously very, very savvy, and they understand that, you know, the live sport is, you know, the broadest, has the most reach, the, you know, highest quality, you know, programming they can associate in advertising and use this fall. So specifically, you know, NASCAR, when NASCAR came back, NASCAR did a tremendous job being the first sport in America to be back. NASCAR sold out within a few weeks. Major League Baseball has been selling very well, obviously with baseball, the postseason, right, and World Series, we're still selling now, but I think we're well ahead of plan, and the same with NFL football. With football, we are pacing ahead of where we were last year. So, you know, in every instance, in every sport, doing very well.
Right. So this is the most unusual, I think, ever upfront advertising market that we've seen in our careers. Like, could you just give us an update on, you know, where you are in the upfront selling process and what you're seeing in the scatter market?
Sure. So it has been a unique upfront marketplace. We took the view that we have to work, you know, very closely with each of our clients and each of them, you know, the agencies that in many cases represent them, to be, you know, as understanding and as flexible as possible to meet their needs. Some industries, we're ready to come back and advertise, you know, quickly. Other ones, and you know, the obvious ones, travel, retail, were harder hit by COVID and the COVID lockdowns. And so we're really very careful to work closely with advertisers to let them be flexible in terms of their spend and in the lockdowns being able to move their commitments around. And then that led us to the upfront. And the upfront, we continued that kind of philosophy of working closely individually and trying to meet our advertisers' individual needs. Now, what that's meant at the end of the day, and you combine that with the strength of the mix of our platforms, is that in all of our key categories, in entertainment, in sports, and in news, you know, we've achieved, depending on the client, you know, low to mid single digit price increases across the board. And so I think we might be the only media company to be positive, have positive price increases across all of our platforms. So that's a tremendous result. While we've done that, scatter has been incredibly strong. Particularly in news, but it's been you know, double digits and more or significant double digits across our businesses as well. And so what we've done, we've withheld about, we've probably sold about 5% less volume than we would otherwise have done, say, last year. And we're very comfortable doing that because of the strength in the scatter market.
Right. So let's just parse out a couple of other pieces for advertising. So what's going on at the local level local obviously hit a lot more by small and medium-sized businesses. What are you seeing currently, and you know, how's that tracking?
So if I go back to, and I think we talked about this a little bit, I can't remember exactly what I said in the last earnings call. If we go back to March, late March, April, the depths of sort of the COVID, beginning the sort of COVID lockdowns, we were seeing 50% declines in local advertising, pretty much across the board. And what happened was the smaller markets, or markets that came out of a COVID lockdown and opened up their economies earlier, their advertising started to come back relatively quickly. The larger markets, New York, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Seattle, I think perhaps Chicago, but the larger markets were slower to return, and they were the markets that continued to have lockdown and businesses shut. And that's still the case, right? But what we've seen from a 50% decline only some months ago in advertising, the larger markets are now down only about 23% in pacing, and our second half, our smaller markets, are pacing up about 12%. And that includes, just to be super transparent, that includes political, right? And so, political, particularly in the big markets of Arizona, Phoenix, Georgia with Atlanta, Detroit, and Florida, those markets are pacing very significantly above this time last year.
Right. Well, that's good news. And then I guess one other piece on advertising news, I mean, your ratings have been phenomenal, but news has always historically been under-monetized. What are you seeing in terms of demand for news on the advertising side?
It's very strong. It's by way of context, so Fox News has been the number one network of all networks, including ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, all summer. So from Memorial Day to Labor Day, in all people, Fox News has been the number one watched network in the country. And obviously what that's done, as our ratings have increased, our demographics, we have larger cohorts of different demographics. So younger, newsors use older, which is not something that I'm particularly worried about. It's logical, but now we have new viewers who advertisers are searching for. So we have new categories of advertisers that have never advertised in news before, now advertising on Fox News. So the advertising demand has been very strong.
Great. So let's move on to sports. You recently sold off the rights to U.S. Open golf to NBC, and you took a big write down last quarter. Can you talk about what the logic or what was the reason behind that action, and then more generally, what sports are must-haves for, what is a must-have versus nice-to-have?
With the USGA, with the COVID delay in the tournament, we started to look at it, some significant scheduling challenges with our commitments to NFL, Major League Baseball postseason. And I think also there were some challenges in terms of how you move around with college football at the time. And so we started to look at it and we started to think, well, we actually, it's going to be difficult to broadcast the tournament with its new schedule. As we began to think about it, we realized that actually it would be a win-win by taking the write down, having USGA move to NBC, where they have the other major golf fixtures, and also would be positive for the USGA. So we think it was a positive transaction. I think it will help in our operating results going forward. We were not broadcasting USGA at a profit, but it meant taking a write down up front.
Right.
And then sports that are must-haves. You know, we like our portfolio now. We have great partnerships with sort of NASCAR, Major League Baseball, football, and WWE.
So on football, which, you know, is the big kahuna, can you talk about how your negotiations with the NFL are progressing, and how are you thinking about the rights for both Sunday and Thursday night and the exclusivity of those rights?
Sure. So the negotiations are progressing. We've been a number of meetings. I'm sure not just with us, I'm sure with our competitors. I'd still say I think the football, the commissioner and the league have been, you know, rightly focused on getting the season up and running. And obviously tonight's a major milestone. I give them a huge amount of credit for that. And so, you know, I'd say that the conversations are still at a relatively early stage, but are sort of moving along nicely. So in terms of our packages, you know, I'm not going to negotiate publicly, our packages Sunday and Thursday have served us well. The NFL has asked, I think, all the broadcasters to think about every package and to think, you know, how would we monetize packages that we currently have or other packages different. So, you know, we're looking at all sorts of options.
And then, you know, college football is supposed to start later in the fall. How much uncertainty is there regarding college football, and, you know, how much visibility do you have on ad dollars related to that at this point?
So some college football starting the fall, and our two conferences, the Big Ten and Pac-12, have current plans to start in the spring to postpone the season. And our communications with them and same with our other sports partners has been, you know, we are ready to broadcast when they are ready to play. So, you know, if they were to move their seasons earlier, you know, we're ready to broadcast them earlier as well. In terms of advertising dollars, you know, at the moment, everyone's expecting to play at some point in the year. And so there's no impact. If seasons were shortened or if there was no season, the savings in rights fees would offset the loss in advertising. So, not a significant financial impact.
Okay. And is there a risk that an abundance of sports inventory with NBA, NHL, MLB playoffs, along with NFL and maybe college football overlapping, you know, do you think that there'll be any cannibalization of advertising inventory, or is the demand there?
The demand is absolutely there today. It's something we thought about with, you know, would there be cannibalization? There's been zero sign of it. In fact, probably the opposite.
So on news, we already talked about how strong news ratings and advertising are. But, you know, how sustainable do you think your ratings are, you know, post-election? I know last election, they remained strong. But what if there is a change in administration? How do you think that affects you?
Look, I don't think it does. You know, if you look at Fox News, you look at the, you know, we've not only been strong, but we've grown ratings in, you know, multiple administrations from you know, both political parties. So, you know, I'll go back to, you know, Clinton, Bush, Obama. We've continually sort of grown ratings. I think the other thing when you think about news, which is important, and it's hard to appreciate necessarily from the outside, but the news ecosystem that we've built around Fox News, and in fact, we officially changed the name to Fox News Media because it's not just, and Suzanne Scott does a tremendous job, not just running a linear news channel. You have Fox News, you have Fox Business, you have their digital businesses. We talked a little bit about Fox Nation and Fox News International, but Fox News Digital, in August, I think, did almost 4 billion page views, which was up 30% year on year. I think you know, the engagement was double, I think, sort of a year ago. And you know, it's the number one in their competitor set, which is a news brand's number one sort of news brand in social media, on Instagram and Facebook. And so it's a tremendous business, and it's not just, you know, it's not just around, you know, one linear channel. It's how we keep our viewers and fans, you know, within that ecosystem.
So let's move on to some of your newer businesses. One of them is sports betting. You know, how much of an appetite has there been for sports betting on Fox Bet? And, you know, can you talk about kind of your view of, you know, you have an 18.5% ownership in FanDuel. You've increased your stake in Flutter Entertainment to 3%. You know, just kind of the outlook of how can they be either co-promoted or co-branded. That means it's an amazing area.
No, absolutely. And in fact, right before we got on this call, someone sent me an article that said, and was from a research company that said, more than 33 million Americans this year will bet in some form, right? Not all online, some in person and some with their friends informally. But 33 million Americans this year will bet on the NFL, which is a huge number. So there's definitely a tremendous demand for sports betting product. We're targeting Fox Bet at a to be sort of more fun and social and sort of very approachable sort of brand, right? It's not for the high end, you know, sophisticated gambler. It's for someone who wants to watch the game and you know, put $5 or $10 on the next play or on the result. And so, and we think it's a very broad brand and a big opportunity for us. It's important, though, that to note that the way we see the market, and it's legalized state by state, and every state is different, and it's complex in terms of states that are allowing sports wagering alone. Others are allowing sports wagering and sort of casino type games and poker type games, which can work quite well with the wagering business. And so you have to look at each market quite separately. But our partnership with Flutter is for 50% of Fox Bet, but we also have this 18.5% option. We don't own 18.5% of a FanDuel yet, but we have an option to buy 18.5%. And so we feel that and then we have the 3% of Flutter, which is, I think, today worth about $600 million, which is roughly double what we purchased it for. And so we have multiple options and multiple ways to monetize this sports wagering opportunity that's emerging in the United States. But we're very excited about it.
We could talk about this area for a long time, but I'm looking at the clock and we have to move on to like hidden value. So in addition to sports betting assets, there are so many other hidden assets in the Fox portfolio, including Tubi, which you brought up earlier. Credible, you have a minority investment in Caffeine, which is a social broadcasting platform for gaming and entertainment. You still have the Fox Studio lot in LA, a cash tax asset resulting from the spin. What can you do to highlight the value of all of these hidden assets?
More conversations like this. We should do this every week. It'd be great. So look, they are, like, we just have to talk about them a lot more. I think, you know, And we have a culture here of, you know, building our businesses, operating the businesses, you know, driving them hard and looking for, you know, the long-term, you know, shareholder return on the businesses we've built. Probably because of that, we don't spend enough time talking about these daily and weekly and sort of wins. And so, you know, but I can tell you, if you go through your list, you know, Tubi is, you know, a tremendous business. Great executive is there. One of my biggest regret about this COVID period is not being able to get to San Francisco and visit that team in person since we did the acquisition. But they're kicking goals. They're doing incredibly well, and they're significantly above our acquisition business case, our investment case. The same can be said for Credible. Credible is, you know, well ahead of our investment base. They've now rolled out their mortgage refinance product, and it's not quite every state, but in like 47 or 48 states, and they're doing tremendously well. We've also learned, and this is a longer answer than you want, with Credible, because Credible's audience fits perfectly with Fox News. And we really just rolled it out with foxbusiness.com and Credible. And what we've learned over the last several months is really how to engage that audience and how to where the synergies are between the Fox Business viewers and users online, and how to sort of introduce them to Credible if they need that introduction or want that introduction. It's the same skill set actually that we're now beginning to apply and learn to apply to FoxBet, right? Because it's the same audience correlation between our sports viewers and the wagering our wagering customers, right? And so how you integrate your programming, how you integrate what you do online in a respectable proper manner is very important, and the way you tweak things have outsized outcomes, right, in terms of driving traffic to those businesses to monetize. Oh, and the last thing in your question, I missed a couple, but the last one on the tax asset, and I'm told, and this is amazing, because if people don't, if you just do a simple EBITDA multiple on our business, you give the tax asset zero value. But if you net present value the cash, which goes for 13 or 14 years back to today, that asset's worth about $3.6 billion. I'm not sure that's evident in our stock price today.
No, of course not. On Tubi, it's just such an interesting asset. Like AVOD, the whole area of AVOD, you're kind of zigging when everyone, except you and I guess Peacock, are zagging. It's just such an interesting area to me. But you've added some Fox content to Tubi, like The Masked Singer. How much more of an opportunity is there to add Fox Entertainment to that platform? And in what ways is Tubi complementary versus more of a brand new vertical?
I don't know if those are mutually exclusive, but we've added, so where we can add, Masked Singer, we've asked, added Gordon Ramsay shows, the next season of Masked Singer will come on, trying to think of the other shows. And they've been incredibly successful at driving people to Tubi. But the great thing about Tubi is the depth of their content and the breadth of their library. And so, where they are really geniuses is using AI to surface content deep within their library that people will watch and will continue to watch. And then obviously serving the advertising against that. So we don't see the growth of Tubi as being something where we need to spend a huge amount of money producing exclusive shows for Tubi. Actually, that's not how Tubi monetizes content, right? They're really good at monetizing its deep library. What we can do is put the shiny shows, right, into Tubi, repurposing shows, across. Across entertainment, across sports, using in some cases our news brands, local stations. We're really interested in see what we can do with local stations and Tubi, and really to make it more unique and to drive audience. But it's not about buying huge libraries or spending millions and tens of millions of dollars on producing exclusive content. That's not the strategy.
Even though we're out of time, I'm going to ask you one last question. Yeah. It's obligatory, but how are you thinking about your asset mix today? And, how do you think about M&A fitting into your strategy going forward? What are we missing?
Look, I think we're in a unique position because, as I mentioned, I think in your first question, a half an hour or so ago, that only a year ago, you know, we were very deliberate in how we set up Fox and the assets that we brought into Fox that we separated from the Disney acquisition. And so, you know, we feel that we're a new company. We've come through this COVID period very well. I mean, the next 6 months look incredibly strong. We will keep our eyes open for acquisitions. Absolutely. But we are also comfortable with the mix of our assets today.
Great. Well, with that, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to see you.
Jessica, great to see you as well.
Thanks.
All the best. And thank you for having me.
Thank you.
All right. All the best. Thank you.